Some time ago, we did a broadcast. We went out to the Botanical Gardens in St. Louis. I think it was one of the most beautiful Revealing the Truths, or back at that time, it was back to the Truth. Some changes happened, but it was with Elder Lionel Getz in South Africa. And we went over there, recorded an episode concerning the millennial kingdom, a thousand-year reign, which is prophesied to occur yet ahead of us. Now, there are going to be troubles. There are going to be trials and, you know, various things that come. But beyond that, there's the promise of good things, blessings, provisions that Yahweh will provide. And it's going to be Yahweh's doing. It's not going to be our doing, but we have our part to play in all of this. And so we do the best that we can with His help. And so today I'd like to talk to you about being in the light of the kingdom. And you'll see why this is entitled In the Light. And of course, we're going to be talking about the coming kingdom. I was going through our library today, just happened to glance and look down at Lockyer's book, All the Promises of the Bible. There's 310 pages in here. It's as thick as the Bible. So you get the sense that the Bible is full of promises. And indeed there are. I turned to page 269 and it quotes Psalm 84:11, which says, "No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly." The promises aren't always just blanket promises. There are some blanket promises, but there are promises with conditions. And we are to walk upright in the Master, in the truth, in Yahweh's Spirit. And this is who Yahweh is looking for, those that will. And so it's important that we, like he told ancient Israel, you know, don't let me find any nakedness in your camp, a Hebrew idiom for, you know, shameful things, things that would cause him to turn, because he says he will turn away from such things. But can you remember a time in which you felt safe, secure, at peace? Just, you know, I remember a time when I was at the ocean, sitting on a bench. I didn't have any worries really at that time. Since then, I've had quite a few actually, but I try to put those, you know, in perspective of, you know, what our life here and what we're doing. And if we are moving in the direction towards the kingdom, we're doing good. As the Apostle Peter said, if you're growing, you're doing good. But if you're not, there's a problem. So again, whether it's Old Testament, New Testament you're looking at, there are promises, but there are, of course, conditions. But I remember being happy, being at peace. And I think it's similar to how I felt at the Botanical Gardens, talking about the coming kingdom. And, you know, we need to think about times like that. The promises, of course, time of the future yet ahead of us. It's important that we have these things in mind, because there's a lot of tribulation that's going to come beforehand. We need to look past the tribulation, keep in mind what we're doing, work out our salvation with fear and trembling. In Isaiah 51, 7 through 8, it says, "Listen to me, you who know righteousness, a people in whose heart is my law. Do not fear the reproach of man, nor be dismayed at their revelings. For the moth will eat them like a garment, and the grub will eat them like wool. But my righteousness will be forever, and my salvation unto all generations." This is another promise. Yahweh is opening up the doors. He's opening them now. He's opening them up later. And there's an atonement process and these things that we see in the feast as a prophetic plan of what Yahweh is doing. If we keep the feast, we'll have an idea of what He's doing, why He's doing things. And, you know, we were talking earlier at the table, not many wise or noble. I mean, we're essentially weak and base, but that is even for a purpose. It's to confound the mighty, and they are going to be confounded once they see what's going to happen. And I think even we'll be shocked at some of the things that are going to take place, because, you know, we're kind of looking through a glass darkly. We don't know everything, and we have yet to see things come about. But We know when Yahshua returns, those in Messiah will be changed in the twinkling of an eye and will be as he is. And that is something else to look forward to. But there are going to be a physical people that will come into the kingdom. There will be a spiritual people that will be coming into the kingdom. And it goes back to the promises made to Abraham. Your descendants shall be like as the sands of the sea, as the stars of heaven, physical, spiritual aspect. And Israel makes up the nations. And of course, we have a lot of mixture in us, I think. I know I've got Irish, Scottish, Indian, Cherokee to be exact. I can't grow a very good beard. Someone was chiding me the other day about that. They thought that was scripturally needed. Well, culturally it may have been the case, but scripturally it doesn't command us. In fact, we could look at Joseph, who was a righteous man, and see that he shaved, but yet he didn't sin. I mean, he had an opportunity to sin with his master's wife, and he refused. So he was righteous. But here in Isaiah 51:7 it says, "Listen to me, you who know righteousness." So he's speaking to us. He's telling us what is yet ahead. His righteousness, his righteous way of life will be forever. So why would we not want to live that way now? And of course we do. Isaiah 51:11. "So the ransomed of Yahweh will return and come with joyful shouting to Zion, and everlasting joy will be on their heads. They will obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee or will flee away." A time to look forward to, a time that is even yet ahead of us. Every nation, tongue, and tribe. Let's go over to Acts. I'm going to turn into the Bible here. I didn't have this up on the screen. But in Acts chapter 10 and verse 35, we read Peter expressing what he learned. And I mean, he had some things he had to learn. And he in turn tells us to keep learning, keep building on our faith, self-control, knowledge, these type of things. Acts chapter 10 and verse 35, what did he learn? He learned that in every nation, the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome to him, is accepted by him, in other words, in some translations may say. And so we don't hesitate about going out overseas. We don't hesitate to reach out. When those, you know, Yahshua himself said, look, ask, knock, you know, the door will be open. Ask, seek, knock, door will be open. And there are those that are asking, seeking, knocking, and the door is being opened unto them. Just another promise. And I'm sure if we looked in Lockyer's book here, we'd find that promise listed. Amazing. He has another set of books that I've referred to before. I don't recall this particular one, so I have to spend some time go through it. Looks like it's laid out in subject matter, so be interesting. Go to Revelation 7. Let's turn there. I don't have it up on the screen. Revelation 7. Where we turn to an area of the future. In verse 9, here's a vision of a great multitude from every... Well, let's just go ahead and read it. 7 and verse 9. Revelation 7 and verse 9. Chapter 7, verse 9. "And after these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude, which no one could count, from every nation and all tribes and peoples and tongues, standing before the throne, before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, palm branches were in their hands." It's a beautiful picture of what's coming. You know, these people that will be coming through the tribulation, being redeemed out of the world, they will be guided, in verse 17, by Yahshua. They will be led to springs of water of life. We're having that opportunity now. We are able to come now. And so we're privileged at this time to be preparing ourselves as a bride And as far as I understand, these are like bridesmaids coming in. They'll follow the bride into the kingdom, but the bride is going to be changed into spirit beings, as a spirit being. Let's go to Genesis 17. Again, going back into their Bibles here. Genesis 17. And verse 5. Notice how Yahweh changed Abraham's name. Why is that significant? Well, he says he was called Abram, exalted father. Then verse 5, it says, no longer shall your name be called Abram. No longer shall you be called an exalted father. But your name shall be Abraham, for I will make you a father of a multitude of nations. Plural. Multitude. Going around the world. Again, why are we reaching out overseas? Because I think that's Yahweh's will for us, and the doors are opening up. And we know Yahweh opens doors that no man can shut. He also closes doors that no man can open. So it's in His will that we're moving forward. We desire that, and so we look for His will to be done. And we desire to be a part of His will. Go over to Isaiah chapter 11. Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 11. I want you to notice chapter 11, verse 11. Then it will happen on the day that Yahweh will again recover the second time with His hand. And of course, we see the hand being very significant, being as describing Yahshua, His arm, His right hand. The remnant of His people who will remain from Asia, from Egypt, from Pathros, from Cush, from Elam, Shinar, Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. And He will lift up the standard for the nations and assemble the banished ones of Israel, and will gather the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Now, the earth doesn't have four corners, but it's figurative in the sense of going out to the world. Verse 13, then the jealousy of Ephraim will depart, and those who harass Judah will be cut off. Harassment of Judah, anti-Semitism, we hear about it. We know it's been happening. That's going to stop. Ephraim will not be jealous of Judah. Judah will not harass Ephraim. They will swoop down on the slopes of Philistines on the west. Together they will plunder the sons of the east. They will possess Edom and Moab. The sons of Ammon will be subjected to them. And Yahweh will utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt. And He will wave His hand over the river with a scorching wind, and He will strike it into seven streams, basically drying it up, and make men walk over dry shod. Verse 16, and there will be a highway from Assyria for the remnant of His people who will be left, just as there was for Israel in the day that they came up out of the land of Egypt. So we're talking about a second exodus here, essentially. An exodus on great wings of an eagle, not just wings of an eagle. Go over to Isaiah 12, just down, starting in verse 1. Then you will say on that day, I will give thanks to you, O Yahweh, for although you were angry with me, your anger is turned away, and you comfort me. Behold, Elohim is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid, for Yahweh Elohim is my strength and song. He has become my salvation. Therefore, you will joyously draw water from the springs of salvation. Didn't we just read of something like that in Revelation 7? And in that day, you will say, give thanks to Yahweh, call upon His name. Why aren't they doing that now? Not really. Some of us are. But we're privileged, called out, special from the world, ecclesia. Special called out people. And in that day you will say, give thanks to Yahweh, call on His name, make known His deeds among the peoples, make them remember that His name is exalted. Praise Yahweh in song, for he has done excellent things. Let this be known throughout the earth. Cry aloud and shout for joy, O inhabitants of Zion, for great in your midst is the Holy One of Israel. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful, what is coming. And we need to remember these things, because in the thick of what's coming, we know tribulation comes before all the blessings, because there's punishment coming upon the children of disobedience in this world. And we know that there's protection. We need to remember those things too. Let's go over to Amos. We can look this up on the screen here. Amos 9:13-15. Behold, days are coming, declares Yahweh, when the plowman will overtake the reaper and the treader of grapes, him who sows seed. Now, actually, let's pick up our Bibles again, because I'd like to take you to Amos before Amos 9 and go to Amos 8. It's a small book. Where'd you go? Amos. There it is. Amos chapter 8 and verse 11. You already know where I'm going. Again, these things are sequential. There's something that's going to happen beforehand, and there's something that happens before Amos 9. So Amos chapter 8 and verse 11. Behold, days are coming, declares Yahweh Elohim, when I will send a famine on the land, not a famine for bread or for thirst for water, but rather the hearing, the Shema, of the words of Yahweh. Now, it's not like the world doesn't have thousands upon millions of Bibles. Bibles are plentiful, but hearing what this word actually says, what it tells us to do, not being deceived and being in darkness, walking around blind, hitting stuff. That's what people are doing. And they say, well, but we're doing all these good things, and well, Yahshua himself says, depart from me in the end, you who work lawlessness. So we need to understand that when he talks about, you know, listen to me, you who know righteousness, we need to, our ears need to pick up. When we know that it's the upright that will be saved, we need to remember these things and stay upright and pray that we'll be able to stand and stay upright at Yahshua's return. But there's coming a time in which it'll be night and we won't be able to be up here, evidently. We read of that in like John 9, verse 4, Yahshua's words. So now is the day we need to proclaim the word. But there's not a lot listening because of the deception, because of the lack of understanding of the word. But that's going to be changing. And the tribulation, as we've noted before, there's at least 7-8 scriptures that specifically talk about people waking up during the tribulation and starting to understand. And no doubt, witnesses, angels, those with understanding will be declaring Yahweh's word. But those that go against Yahweh's word and submit to the beast, the mark thereof, wrath poured out in full on them. So there's going to be the distinction made, clean versus unclean. We need to be on the clean side. We need to be in the sheep line. We need to do those things which are pleasing to the Father and not be found with shameful things so that he doesn't turn away from us. And he gives us time to repent. And we can be thankful for that. Let's go back to Amos 9:13-15. Let's start over. Behold, the days are coming, declares Yahweh, when the plowman will overtake the reaper and the treader of grapes, him who sows seed, when the mountains will drip sweet wine and all the hills will be dissolved. Also, I will restore the captivity of my people Israel, and they will rebuild the ruined cities and live in them. And they will also plant vineyards and drink their wine and make gardens and eat their fruit, and I also will plant them on their land, and they will not again be rooted out from their land, which I have given them, says Yahweh your Elohim. Plowmen will overtake reaper. Rebuilding of ruined cities, that's coming. If you've seen any of the images out of the Middle East and from Syria and there, it's just desolate. Damascus is forthcoming, I'm sure. It's going to be laid waste. And then, of course, the tribulation is going to come and things are going to be laid low, all mountains, hills. And that is in respect to governments as well. But it's all for a purpose, for the true peace, the true prosperity to come that's yet ahead of us. And while there are unpredictable unemployment rates today, there will be plenty of work in the kingdom, with no foreclosures and no worries about one's next meal. There will also be a time to enjoy creation and to study the law of Yahweh. What there won't be, there won't be corrupt politicians or leaders. There won't be 50 million aborted babies. There won't even be one. There won't be gangs defending their territory and killing the innocent caught in between. There won't be fear and unrest. There won't be tolerated any disobedience. Hallelujah. True peace, true prosperity. That's coming. It's sure. There's 610 pages. 610 pages of promises in this particular book. And he may have not gotten them all. Isaiah, actually, let's take a look at this image. This was in the beginning. And I think that's significant, saying that it was in the beginning, because paradise was in the beginning. That's going to be restored. The reason paradise was lost is because of man's way, choosing his own way rather than Yahweh's way, deciding for himself what was right. And so sin occurred, transgression followed, the penalty followed. So that same blessing curse is still in effect. But we're in a fallen world. Isaiah 65, 21, 23, but it's not going to stay that way. They will build houses and inhabit them. They also will plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They will not build and another inhabit. They will not plant and another eat. For as the lifetime of a tree, so will be the days of my people, and my chosen ones will wear out the work of their hands. They will not labor in vain or bear children for calamity or for abortion. I might just add in there. For they are the offspring of those blessed by Yahweh and their descendants with them. This is speaking of the millennial rule, the coming kingdom of Yahweh. We need to get in line now with those ways so that we can be a part of that kingdom as spirit beings. Because there's a reason for that even. Israel will plant and build, live and eat. There will be a lot more people involved with agricultural aspects in the kingdom. Everyone will see growth in themselves and those around them, along with the seeds they plant. Isaiah 9 and verse 7, there will be no end to the increase of his government or of peace on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it, to uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore. The zeal of Yahweh of hosts will accomplish this. Again, not by our power or by our strength, but by his spirit. Yahweh's spirit, as it says in Zechariah 4, 6. So no end to the reign of Yahshua and his government in the kingdom. And we certainly understand that he will be King of Kings at that time. What do you think will be the rules, the laws at that time with his kingship? He is king over us now if we're walking in his ways, his Father's ways, which are his ways. But what will Yahshua's return be like before the coming kingdom? Matthew 24:27. Just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will the coming of man be. So much for the rapture idea. You know, it's going to be something secret. People are going to be, you know, out of their cars, and cars are going to be left running, these type of things. You hear about these fantasies that the churches teach, and it has nothing to do with reality of what we find in Yahweh's word. Every eye will see him like lightning across the sky. Revelation 1:7, behold, he is coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him. Even so are even those who pierced him, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn over him. So it is, or so it is to be. Amen. The New American Standard Bible capitalizes the first part of this as a bit of a prophecy taken from Daniel 7:13, where Yahshua approaches Yahweh's throne. But I think that's already taken place, as he's been presented to him as a wave chief. So the thing that hasn't happened yet is 1 Thessalonians 4:17 through 18. Then we who are alive and remain will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Master in the air, and so we shall always be with the Master. Therefore, comfort one another with these words. And these are comforting words. Now remember, Yahshua is coming to the earth to reign, so as we're caught up with him, we're still coming back on the earth to reign with him. And even be given the opportunity to sit with him on his throne, to have rulership with him. And that's something that is going to surprise a lot of people when they see these things come about. But Yahweh will not forsake us, nor the rest of the people who call upon his name and do his will. Remember, all nations, tongues, tribes who will do this will be accepted by him. And it talks about, well, earlier I should have mentioned, it says even those who pierced him back in Revelation 1:7. Well, the descendants of those who pierced him, I think, is a good understanding of that, because we understand that there's a first and second resurrection. The first resurrection mentioned in Revelation 20 is the one we desire to be in, to where there will no longer be any death or suffering for those in that resurrection, but eternal life is granted. But then there's a resurrection of the rest of the dead, a judgment upon all mankind that died. But those in Messiah, they'll even precede the change that'll occur for those standing at Messiah's return. So there's process, there's order. Things are very specific according to Yahweh. And so these things will come about in due time at their appointed time. But Yahshua returns by the east gate of Jerusalem. Let's go over in our Bibles to Ezekiel chapter 43. Some think this area of scripture is kind of past and not done, or, you know, done away with, I suppose, but I really don't think that's true. So much here, and it talks about the Messiah. The Messiah, we know, hasn't come back yet, but he is going to come back a second time. Ezekiel 43, starting in verse 1. Then he led me, and this is a vision, he led me to Ezekiel, being led to the gate facing towards the east. This is Jerusalem, as he's seeing in vision. And behold, the glory of Yahweh of Israel was coming from the way of the east, and his voice was like the sound of many waters, and the earth shone with his glory. And there's other scriptures we could look at. I mean, it talks about his lightning, also talks about his feet setting on the Mount of Olives, becoming a great valley. There's going to be some topography type changes, different things happening. But in verse 2 it says, behold, the glory of the Elohim of Israel was coming from the way of the east, and his voice was like the sound of many waters, and the earth shone with his glory, and it was like the appearance of the vision which I saw, like the vision which I saw when he came to destroy the city, and the visions were like the vision which I saw by the river of Kabar. and I fell on my face, and the glory of Yahweh came into the house by the way of the gate facing towards the east. And then the Spirit lifted me up, brought me into the inner court. Behold, the glory of Yahweh filled the house. Speaking of the temple, how this is all going to take place, nothing standing there now, but we know that there will be, according to this prophecy. Verse 6, then I heard one speaking to me from the, but I should add to that, it could be a tent, something set up for the man of sin, and then something else physically as would be set up for this to take place. But he said to me, Son of man, this is the place of my throne and the place of the soles of my feet, where I will dwell among the sons of Israel forever. And the house of Israel will not again defile my holy name, neither they nor their kings, nor their harlotry by the corpses of their kings when they die, by setting their threshold by my threshold and their doorpost by my doorpost, with only the wall between me and them. And they have defiled my holy name, which or by their abominations which they have committed, so I have consumed them in my anger. So this is after the tribulation. Now let them put away their harlotry, their corpses of the kings far from me, and I will dwell among them forever. As for you, son of man, describe the temple and the house of Israel, that they may be ashamed of their iniquities, and let them measure the plans. It's going to be something tremendous that's coming. Yahshua is not only the arm and hand of Yahweh, he is the branch and the tree that we are being grafted into, essentially. Isaiah 4, 2 through 6, in that day the branch of Yahweh will be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth will be the pride and the adornment of the survivors of Israel. It will come about that he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy, everyone who is recorded for life in Jerusalem, when Yahweh has washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and purged the bloodshed of Jerusalem from their midst. By the spirit of judgment and the spirit of burning, then Yahweh will create over the whole area of Mount Zion, over her assembly, a cloud by day, even smoke, and the brightness of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory will be a canopy. There will be a shelter to give shade from the heat of the day, and refuge and protection from the storm and the rain. Changes even in the weather. And you probably get that just from the mountains being laid low. But with Yahshua in the kingdom established as King of Kings, again, the idea, what law will be established? Well, I think the word tells us. Let's go into our Bibles again. Micah, the last books towards the end, kind of a minor prophet with major information before Habakkuk, after Jonah. Some of the reasons I'm going to this, I can't fit all of it into a slide for us, so best to have it just opened up in our own Bibles. Micah 4, starting in verse 1, and it will come about in the last days that the mountains of the house of Yahweh will be established as the chief of the mountains. It will be raised above the hills. The people will stream to it. Many nations will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the Elohim of Jacob, that he may teach us about his ways, that we may walk in his paths. And from Zion will go forth the law. It's all synonymous. Ways, paths, law. It's his will. Even the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And he will judge between many peoples and render decisions for mighty, distant nations. And they will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they train for war. What a beautiful passage that is. Because you know how many millions and billions they put into training for war, building of armaments. Have you seen some of the jets that they now have? Just sold one to Turkey. I'm not sure what we're thinking with that, but I think we're going to have another dictator there, it looks like. And democracy is going to be moved out. But we're not really for democracy. We're for Yahweh's government. And that's top down. Top down from him, as the headship is, as the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11. And he says, I don't want you to misunderstand this, brethren. It's Yahweh first, and then the master, Yahshua, and then man, woman, children, so on and so forth. So there's order and purpose in Yahweh, and he has everything laid out, including his government. And so it's that government that we're looking forward to. We're sojourning, like Abraham, you know, was looking for the promised land. We're looking for this promised land that's coming. And we hope to be there, changed into spirit beings to help with the government in that land. Isaiah 11, 6 through 9. More information about what this is going to be like. And we need to let this sink in. Get an image. Consider yourself being there. It says, and the wolf will dwell with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little boy will lead them. Also the cow and the bear will graze. Their young will lie down, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The nursing child will play in the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child will put his hand on the viper's den. And they will not hurt nor destroy all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the waters cover the sea. Another beautiful passage. Things that are coming, things that we need to get in our minds and in our hearts, knowing that this is going to happen. These are promises and visions of the future made by Yahweh, giving us an insight. And we know there are things yet to take place. I remember watching a documentary by the Animal Planet called Pig Bomb. And, you know, we've all heard of the swine flu. We've not necessarily heard about what's happening in this country, anyway. It was a documentary about what's happening with these big Eurasia boars that are like 700 pounds, up to 700 pounds, 3.5 feet tall, bigger shoulders, heads, tusks. They think what happened is some Russian boars were brought over, mixed in with some of the wild boars, and they're more aggressive, they're more troublesome. And in 1990, 19 states, there were something like 1.5 million. Today, it's in about 45 states, about 7 million and growing. They're multiplying. In Texas, there were $50 million in damage done here a few years back, just 1 year's worth of damage. One property there is said to have been catching approximately 1,700 a year, either killing them or catching them, putting them down, though, essentially. Others are going out with dogs, others with night vision, guns, special bore guns, bigger bore, so they can put them down quicker. Yet the population is still growing. Now they're manufacturing, I just recently saw this 30-foot pin that they put feed in the middle and they drop this pin down, and then it expands as soon as it hits the ground. Evidently, in case any of the boars get caught, it'll expand and they'll still catch them within the cage. And then they can go in with the guns and kill them and bury them. Pigs multiply like rabbits. Females have the ability to have 3 litters a year, well, within a 14-month period, producing on average about 6 piglets each time. And when we hear of things like this, when we watch documentaries like that, and of course we know of some of the things happening down in Florida, the boa constrictors, alligators, some of these things are getting out of hand. They're having trouble with the mosquitoes. They're trying to implement some things to prevent that. But at some point, the scale's gonna tip to where it's gonna be much a bigger problem than what we see now. Let's go over to Revelation 6 and verse 8. Let's see what Scripture says. I looked, and behold, an ashen horse. And this is during the time of the tribulation. And he who sat on it had the name Death, and Hades was following after him, or with him. Authority was given to them over a fourth of the earth, to kill with sword, with famine, with pestilence, and with the wild beasts of the earth. We had a brother, I believe he's a brother, down in southern Missouri. He had gotten mauled by a bear. He had to run up a tree when he went out hunting. And he now carries a .44 Magnum with him because he walks with a limp, not able to walk. So there are some pretty dangerous animals around. But these pigs are able to destroy agriculture. And if there's going to be famine, you know, there's going to be things that these things will work against the people in the world. But that's some of the things that are coming before the good news, before Yahshua returns. So beyond this prophesied suffering is more telling of Yahshua's return. Isaiah 40 and verse 3 through verse 5. A voice is calling, clear the way for Yahweh in the wilderness. Make smooth in the desert a highway for our Elohim. Let every valley be lifted up and every mountain and hill be made low. And let the rough ground become a plain and the rugged terrain a broad valley. Then the glory of Yahweh will be revealed and all flesh will see it together, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken. This kind of reminds me of what Yahshua said. He said, he's not coming back until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh. But even with that, when he comes back, he's going to be asking the question, will the Son of Man find faith upon the earth? Things are going to be so bad, so difficult, and we don't know how quick all this is going to come upon the world. We know it's foretold to come. So, hate to be the bearer of both good and bad, but the fact is, the bad comes, the darkness, the dark of the storm comes before the clearing, when things will be made well and good, and that healing can occur on the earth. But there's healing that's even now occurring within Yahweh's people. But geographical changes, removing of mountains, things are just going to be changed, and hopefully it'll be more like Hawaii, constant weather. You know, when I first moved over there, I couldn't tell the seasons. It took me, I know you're from Hawaii, it took me 3 years, about 2 years, to actually start to feel the seasons. When it got down to 50, I was freezing. So that's a little different than here in Missouri, because, I mean, we had below 20 below zero last year, I think. I mean, I went into the house. Carrie and I came back from work, and I went into an area that I was looking for something, and then all of a sudden I heard this, and I'm like, is she taking a shower? You know, because Carrie went off into the other direction, and no, a pipe had busted. So, but Yahweh provided. I mean, it could have been a real mess, but as it was, he allowed it to happen when I was there to deal with it. So I ran out, turned off the water, and dealt with it. So we'll have to deal with some of the things that come. There's mention of floods coming, there's mention of fire coming, but we know that Yahweh's not going to flood the world like he did before. But the fire, that's going to be something that is yet ahead of us. And they talk about Yellowstone. They just found another super volcano. There are seven in the world that we knew of. There's now eight that we are aware of. And when we read in Revelation, we talk, you read about the pillars of smoke coming up. I can't help but think about these super volcanoes. And so there's some things happening in Hawaii on the Big Island right now. And there's been a volcano over in the Philippines recently, something down in another area. But I mean, these things are gonna come and go, but eventually tribulation is gonna be here. Whether or not we're alive for that, I just don't know. But we need to think beyond the tribulation. We need to think about what Yahweh is working out. We need to think about the good that is coming. And it is very good. And it was very good, originally what he had created. But he's going to, again, restore. He's going to bless rather than curse. And he's blessing us even now, knowing what we know, being able to come here together and worship in spirit and in truth. It's a blessed thing, and it's something that we cannot take lightly, nor do we take it lightly. Isaiah 30 in verse 20 through 21. What will we, those chosen who overcome in Messiah, be doing in the kingdom? Isaiah 30, 20 through 21. Although Yahweh has given you the bread of privation and water of oppression, he, your teacher, will no longer hide himself. But your eyes will behold your teacher, your ears will hear a word behind you. This is the way, walk in it, whenever you turn to the left or to the right or to the left. There will be continued learning, a voice saying, this is the way. No doubt, Yahweh's people who are spirit will be able to hear and understand the thoughts of people, just as Joshua was. And if we're ruling with Joshua, it's not just talking about Joshua helping the people, it's talking about us helping the people as well. But Joshua was able to discern the intent, the heart of individuals. Did in Matthew 9, 4 and 12 and verse 25. I'm sure there are other accounts. But those who are spirit and ruling with Yahshua will have that power and more. And it's one of the best things that we'll have at our disposal, plus our experience, our keeping the feast, our coming to the Sabbath. That's instrumental for us. It's helpful for us to be able to share that with others. Our own experiences in overcoming and prevailing with Yahweh's help is going to be a blessing for them. And it's even a blessing for us now as we come together and we give testimonies and we describe how Yahweh's worked things out. It gives us endurance that we can keep going and keep moving forward. And we're not perfect. We still have things to overcome. We still have things to do, but it's in process. And so, like the last time I spoke, conforming to the Spirit, we are in process conforming to Yahweh's Spirit. It's a good thing. The rest of the world is out there doing their own thing. Well, they're going to learn that that's not the way. Yahweh has a way. He has a path. He has a law. And the Word says we're to be following in it, doing these things. And His Spirit is moving us and moving us forward. And so we're very grateful. But Sabbaths will be kept in the kingdom. And of course the question is, if they've been kept in the past, they were kept in the New Testament by the disciples, apostles, why would we not keep them now? The answer is we are to keep them now. But Isaiah 20 or 66, verse 23, and it shall be from new moon to new moon and from Sabbath to Sabbath, all mankind, emphasis, will come to bow down before me, says Yahweh. So what should our actions be now before entering that coming kingdom? Luke 9, 2, and he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of Yahweh and to perform healing. Verse 6, departing, they began going through the villages, preaching the evangel, and healing everyone. The coming kingdom in which Yahshua is king is the evangel. I mean, it's a part, it's good news of the Messiah, it's good news of the coming kingdom, it's good news about what Yahweh is doing. And what is it that we must do in Yahshua's name? Mark 8, 34 through 37. And he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his stake." What must the people have thought about that at that time? They knew there were impalements, you know, people being put up on trees and stakes, and that the process that they'd have to like carry their own stake through the streets to be pinned up. That was death. That wasn't an enjoyable thing. And Yahshua is saying, we need to deny ourselves and do the same, giving up our lives. I think the people understood that. I don't think necessarily people we talk to all the time understand that. It's not always easy. There's a Greek word in talking about following this narrow way. The Greek word is thlebo, and it means hard-pressed, difficult. We're not going to have everything we want. It's not going always going to go the way we think it would. We would like it to go. It'll go in the way I think Yahweh expects it to go, because we make our plans, but He directs our steps. And we need to be aware that He is involved in our lives, being here, being in His presence, worshiping Him. He's looking out for us. As long as we continue to overcome and to grow and to do those things which are pleasing to Him. Well, let's go back in here to Mark 8 and verse around 35 here. It says, "For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. And there are those that have left to do their own thing. They're losing their lives. But whoever loses his life for my sake and for the good news, for both Messiah and for what Yahweh has planned, coming kingdom and so on and so forth, will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what will a man exchange or give in exchange for his soul?" Are we taking this to heart? Are we doing all that we need to be doing? Can we do more? Have we given up our lives, or are we trying to save ourselves with our own means? We each have to work out our own salvation, consider what we're doing, make sure that we're doing these things in fear and trembling, for we know who we're serving. And we need to be able to help those that are coming in to serve Him and to worship Him in spirit and in truth. And our own experiences help one another. But do we understand that we are helping one another? That we meet together, that we encourage one another? This in Yahweh's truth, in His spirit? Or are we doing the opposite? Refusing to attend, refusing to come to the feast? Wouldn't that cause the opposite effect? If we're not building, are we tearing down? There's still blessing and cursings. And if we don't walk in the way that we've been shown, could we fall into the deception that the world is in now, being blind and deaf, unable to see? The famine of the word, is that in the earth? Is that in the world today? You know, over the last 20 years, I mean, I'd say just in the last 10 years, things are getting confusing out there. There's all these different names for the Father, all these different names for the Son, all these different teachings that are not in line with the word. It's famine. It's confusion. It's going to be hard for people to find the way. But here we are. We're willing to give our lives for this, are we not? Are we doing those things which we believe will have everlasting effects? Or are we doing those things which, well, it can still have an everlasting effect, but in the negative sense? We know tribulation is coming, but we know that after that, the kingdom is going to be established. Light is going to be in that kingdom. Light can be within us now if we're doing those things which are pleasing to the Father and leaning not on our own spirit and understanding, but on Yahweh's spirit and his understanding. Let's open up our Bibles to Zechariah. We'll close with a scripture. Zechariah chapter 14. More about the coming kingdom, what it will be like. Zechariah 14, verse 16, starting there. Then it will come about that any who are left of all the nations that went against Jerusalem, of course, we know about Armageddon, the Valley of Jezreel, Valley of Decision, that's coming. Even now, Israel is surrounded. Basically, a powder keg down there, you know, a little spark sets off a big fire. But it says, all those that actually went up to Jerusalem that are alive after that will go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. And it will be in that whichever of the families of the earth do not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, then there will be no rain on them. Yahweh of hosts is another, I think, a title we see for Yahshua. And I believe he'll be called Yahweh Zitkenu, Yahweh our righteousness in the kingdom. There's more coming even after the kingdom. You realize that? I mean, there's got to be a purification process even after the, you know, after the thousand-year reign in which Yahweh himself comes down. There's no end to his kingdom. So why would we not want to be a part of it now, striving for that which is coming, overcoming this world, preparing for the next, sojourning like Abraham, looking for the promised land. But in verse 17, it says, on that family who doesn't come up to keep the feast, it says there'll be no rain on them. Verse 18, if the family of Egypt, again, you know, all mankind, Egypt, we're not talking about Israel. We're talking about everyone. And in the close of Ecclesiastes says, the whole duty of mankind is to be obedient to the Father. If the family of Egypt does not go up or enter, then there will be no rain that will fall upon them. It will be the plague with which Yahweh smites the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. This will be the punishment of the Egypt, punishment of all the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles. Brethren, we have the opportunity right now to live in the light of the coming kingdom and the light of Yahweh's word now, essentially living in the light of the coming kingdom. It's a beautiful thing. Yahweh's word is beautiful. His ways are wonderful because they produce good things. There's a lot of bad things in the world, and some bad things can happen to us because of some of the things in the world. But Yahweh allows certain things to take place. Doesn't mean that he's forsaken us, doesn't mean that he's letting us go. Because if we're doing our part, he promises not to let go, nor to forsake us, but to give us everlasting life. And the coming kingdom is just a snapshot of what is yet ahead. There's a lot more after it. That's a message for another time. Hallelujah.